Good morning. This is the KUNM Collin Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us this morning. Today we're talking about child welfare in New Mexico. New Mexico's ranking in the 2012 Kids Count Report fell from 46th to 49th in the nation this year. The report ranks states on things like economic well-being, education, health, and family and community to come to a ranking on how children are doing in each state. New Mexico has often been near last in these rankings, but what happened that we dropped several places, and what can we do to change this? We'll take your calls and comments this morning. You can call locally here in Albuquerque, 277-5866. Our toll-free number is 877-899-5866. You can also send emails to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. Joining us to discuss this morning, we have Veronica Garcia. She is Executive Director of New Mexico Voices for Children. She also served as Secretary of Education under former Governor Bill Richardson. And Alan Sanchez. He is President and CEO of St. Joseph Community Health, an organization that focuses on early childhood education. Later this hour, we will also be joined by a representative from the Children, Youth, and Families Department. But first, I want to start with you, Ms. Garcia. Let's talk a little bit about the results from this year's report. Were you surprised that New Mexico dropped to 49th?
Well, I think we have to look at how this report changed. And that is that they have new indicators. They added 9 new indicators. And so when you change a report of that nature, and a state's economic conditions change and so on, I'm not happy that we ranked 49th, but I can't say that I was surprised. Access to early childhood education, such as pre-K, has always been an issue. The economic well-being of parents and of families has always been an issue. And as the state of the economy in New Mexico, has declined, all of those kinds of factors have been contributors in the past. And now that we are looking more discreetly at 9 new factors, one in particular looking at economic well-being and foreign education, particularly we declined in children not attending preschool, I was not surprised.
Well, so this information, we do have a link posted to the 2012 Kids Count Report state information, the state data for New Mexico. You can go to our website, kunm.org, if you'd like to pull up this report and take a look at some of the statistics that we're looking at. There's also a profile. It's just a 2-page kind of synthesis of the results. And specifically at this economic well-being section, there's 4 sections, and then within each section there were 4 indicators. And in the economic well-being section, New Mexico lost standing in all 4 of the indicators. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the first one was the area of children in poverty. And if we look at where New Mexico was in 2005, and now looking at 2010, we went from 26 to 30% of our children living in poverty. Children whose parents lack a secure employment, 7% increase in that area. Children living in households with a high housing cost burden. This is a new indicator, and that increased by 2%. And teens not in school and not working rose by 2%. So those were the 4 areas that were measured in economic well-being.
So in your work at New Mexico Voices for Children, do you see these indicators as being solely indicators based on what's happening to the country and the global economy, or is it more complicated with respect to how state policies are affecting things?
I believe that there are nuances that impact these statistics. And, for example, when we're not comparing the states, it is not an apples-to-apples comparison. And I just go back to the example of pre-K. You have some states that have universal access. New Mexico does not. In terms of educational levels of parents, compare us to Massachusetts, let's say, we're going to be much lower. And so all of those factors come into play, and we have to look at what is happening in New Mexico, and what can we do in terms as a community of advocates, to influence policymakers to use this data in a way that will influence good public policy that can help turn this around.
Were there findings in this report that were surprising to you?
Well, you know, I thought we had made inroads when we passed the Pre-K Act that we would have more children enrolled in pre-K. And as we look at the comparison, there was a 2% decline. Fourth graders not being proficient in reading. And again, as we look at all of these other factors, you know, while when I was secretary, we moved really hard to have, you know, rigorous academic standards and rigorous accountability. But yet we know that children do not learn in isolation. You know, they are in, you know, if they're living in poverty, they're homeless, if their parents are not feeling secure, then obviously education does not become the primary focus for the families. And so high school students not graduating on time, you know, you really would hope that with, you know, the high school redesign and some of those pieces that we would see improvements. Again, people need to remember that these are statistics for 08-09. And so, you know,
it's a particularly bad year when it comes to economic well-being and a lot of across the country and around the world. Right?
Exactly. And some of the various indicators also come from different years. So that makes it a little bit different, difficult. And I think it's important for people to look at this report. And I think the intent by the Annie B. Casey Foundation when they create, you know, these reports, this is using comparable data statewide, nationally rather, so it is a fair apples-to-apples comparison. When we look at student proficiency, this is on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, that it is a test that is not taken by all students. It's a sample of students, but it's the same test that is taken across the nation so that we can more easily make state-by-state comparisons.
Alan Sanchez from St. Joseph Community Health, let me ask you, were you surprised at New Mexico's fall from 46th to 49th in state rankings across the nation?
No, we weren't surprised. It was pretty evident. I think there's enough warning signs that have been out there. It's like this alarm has been ringing. St. Joseph Community Health runs the largest home visiting program in the state, so we have a real connection to families, young
families.
Explain
what that is.
Yeah, home visiting is what we do is we send a nurse or a trained visitor into the home once a week with a curriculum to moms that are expecting prenatal and infants. We send them once a week for 3 years. It's a home-based health education, but it includes all the elements of reading, of preparing the children for school, and we start from prenatal. And we see that the families that go through this, those children will get to third grade and they will be at reading level. But I'm not surprised because the alarm is there, and we try and make it more complicated, and it isn't. The bottom line is we've become numb as a society in New Mexico to this graduation rate that's hovering about 60%. This should be an alarm ringing. There should be a big bell somewhere in the state just sounding, saying those 40% that aren't graduating, just because they don't graduate doesn't mean they go on to be not to be parents. And then these who are graduating and having to go to college, and instead of taking 4 years, they're taking 6 years. The signs are all there.
And the graduation rate at 6 years at UNM, for example, is still, I think it's less than 50%.
Right, as the university level, yeah. So there is a huge alarm ringing. And we need to wake up to this. I think we become numb. We become, in a sense, well, this is New Mexico. And we're a very small population. We're only, you know, just a little over 2 million people in the state. And so to understand it is simpler than I think sometimes politicians will try to complicate it so we don't get a solution. But everyone agrees. And the 49th, I mean, thank God for Mississippi. Huh? Otherwise, we'd be at the bottom of everything.
Although sorrow for Mississippi.
Sorrow for Mississippi, and I wish them well. So in New Mexico, what we see is like a spiral. It's just growing. It's out of control. Imagine 15 years from now, with this graduation rate, what we're going to look like. We are trading places with third world countries at this time. You know, in the care and education of our children. And what frustrates us at St. Joseph is that there are means. For instance, St. Joseph, we went upstream. We still owned the hospitals in town. Our mission began in 1865 when the Sisters of Charity came to New Mexico and started the first private and public schools. They started the public schools and then turned them over to the state and these hospitals. But we changed strategy, not mission. We went upstream. We took our hospitals, we sold them to a for-profit organization, took that money, you know, and now we use that money to keep children out of their hospital. And we have to go upstream. If we don't do this, the price is greater than anything we could think of as far as funding a program. The real issue is what happens if we don't do something about this. No one in the state should be shocked about this. You see the children in poverty around us. You see the children in bad health. Everyone knows children that have been homeless. Everybody knows children that have been abused. Everyone knows children that are not reading at the grade level or doing the math at the grade level.
Well, how are your kids doing and how has the recession affected them? Give us a call this morning. 277-5866 is the number here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866 or send an email to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online at our website, kunm.org. Just click on the link for this show, and there's a space at the bottom where you can post your comments for all of our online community to see. And we will try to get our producers to bring some of those comments into the show when we get them. Let's go to a call now from Glenn in Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for having this program. I used to work for Child Protective Services, and a couple of months ago I was at a truck stop in Albuquerque getting some coffee, and this young lady holding baby came up to me around the pumps and gave me this story about how she needed money to buy some gas to get back to school, and it just wasn't ringing true to me. So through my mind went the thought that I personally have a legal responsibility if I think I'm a witness to child abuse, neglect, to call the police and let them know and let Child Protective and the whole system sort it out. And I did, and the comment from the 911 operator was, is the child 2 years or younger? And I said, it appears to be. And within a few minutes, the police were there, and I guess I'm just wanting to encourage other people, given that we are here in the Southwest and a lot of traffic in the summer with homeless children and other folks like this young lady coming through, to think about that we are individually, personally, legally responsible to call if we suspect that abuse, neglect is going on. Thank you.
Mr. Sanchez.
Yeah, we have an obligation. Every one of us has an obligation, if you see any child abuse, to report that. And what we see, for instance, a child in homelessness or you see some violence that they're exposed to, we call these adverse childhood experiences. And these delays, which is incredible, the number of children that are experiencing this. It could be a night homeless in a car. It could be a food insecurity. It could be an issue of domestic violence. All these effects, negative effects, affect the child's development. We know from 3 months in the womb till they're 18 months old, there's 9,500 synapses connecting per second in the brain. And there's a study you can see. If you Google Dr. James Hickman, he's a Nobel Prize winning economist, and he's done studies, and he has shown that for every dollar that we invest in early childhood, there is a 10% return per year per life of that child. But you can see these studies, if you Google that, where there's positive or negative exposure to the child and the brain development. When we talk about early childhood development, we're not talking about getting children in the desk earlier. We're talking about the formation of their brain and their being, of what's going to hold the knowledge in the future that they get. I always use this example of a potter in New Mexico making a beautiful pot with clay. And this is what's happening with the little child's and the little one's their brain as it's developing.
But it's imagine, very soft and malleable too, right?
Just imagine before that clay hardens, that it's still soft, that someone would be poking a hole in it. And then there we are trying to pour in the K through 12 years later, and the children have attention deficit disorder. They have different problems happening because of home or a delay in a detection of a developmental delay.
Let's take another call. Francesca in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I am an educator in the public schools here in an elementary school, and I couldn't agree with Mr. Sanchez more. we have got to draw attention to our poor children in New Mexico and our poor families, or our families in poverty. My elementary school has climbed from 35% free and reduced lunch to 78% of our families in free and reduced lunch. We have two bus stops at hotels that pick up some of our families, and this so affects their education. It is really difficult to teach hungry kids. So I agree, and I really think we have to address poverty before we even talk about higher standards and better education. We've got to feed these kids and get them healthy.
Ms. Garcia.
Francesca, thank you for teaching in our schools, and I commend you for doing the work that you do every day. I think it's very important for our community to realize that if we're going to lift New Mexico out of poverty, we have to invest in education, and we have to invest in health, and we have to invest in early education. And I just want to talk about how much this is an economic driver. I think sometimes people think of these as social or educational programs, and we just can't, quote-unquote, afford it. And we hear that all the time. And I also hear all the time that we're, you know, dumping money, we're pouring more money into education, and we're just not getting the results. And I'd like to just share with your listeners a story of two different countries about 35 years ago, Singapore and Jamaica. Jamaica decided that they would invest in tourism. Singapore decided they would invest in health and in education, and creating a very aligned system of education, you know, from zero to, you know, P20, just this very aligned system, and also in the health of its citizens. The gross domestic product 35 years later in Jamaica is virtually the same. Singapore's has more than tripled and is now considered a commercial world leader. But it was a very systemic and focused view by their leaders that recognize that to invest in health and education of its people will result in tremendous productivity and prosperity for everyone. It's an investment that New Mexico needs to do in order to turn this ship around in terms of, you know, we really have to look at this in a systemic way. And I think one of the huge missing links, if you notice one of the increases, there was a slight improvement in the health area. And that was
so
in children without health insurance. And
low
that was
birth
like
weight went down. Children without health insurance went down by 29% between 2008 and 2010.
And that was the increased enrollment in Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, I think that we have an opportunity now with the Affordable Care Act and the expansion of Medicaid, this Medicaid opportunity that we really need to encourage our governor to move in that direction. And then we need to really encourage our policymakers to invest in early learning.
We're talking about child welfare in New Mexico. New Mexico dropped from 46th to 49th in the nation in the rankings on child welfare. There's a link to this report on our website, KUNM.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. You're hearing from Veronica Garcia. She is the executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children. Also, Alan Sanchez. He is president of St. Joseph Community Health. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with your calls.
Ballet Pro Musica Festival presents the world-renowned National Ballet of Mexico and La Catrina Quartet with pianist Jacqueline Helene in a romantic program, From Vienna with Love, with music by Haydn, Ravel, and Johann Strauss, August 10, 11, and 12 at the elegant National Hispanic Cultural Center. For tickets, call 505-724-4771 or go online to balletpromusica.org. Order today for an experience of unparalleled beauty. A message from the tax-exempt Ballet Pro Musica Festival.
I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about child welfare and the new Kids Count Report, the 2012 Kids Count Report that has New Mexico dropping from 46th to 49th in child welfare rankings in the nation. We are taking your calls and comments this morning. What are you doing to help kids in your community? What are you doing to help your kids? Give us a call. 277-5866 is the number to call locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We'll take your emails to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online. Let's go to Hal in Albuquerque. Good morning, Hal. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a little upset that your guests are using euphemisms like invest. We don't need invest. We need money. And our state legislature and our governor have refused to consider raising taxes on the wealthy so we can afford schools. We haven't been throwing money at schools under Veronica Garcia, and even worse, under Hannah Scandera. We've had less money for our schools. So until the state legislature and the administration is willing to bite the bullet and tax the rich, tax the 1%, we're not going to have money for programs, and we're not going to see these indicators change. Thank you.
Thanks, Hal. Mr. Sanchez.
Thank you, Hal. You hit the nail on the head. You hit the nail on the head. You were straight on with the arrow to the target. It's the when we say investment, we mean that the state has to pony up and has to take some responsibility. I want to invite listeners to go to investinkidsnow.org, and we're trying to see where we can find the money to get this done. And this is the bottom line. Everyone knows we have a crisis, and we've been sitting around talking about this for 10 years. We have a major crisis in front of us, and now something has to be done. We have to go beyond talk and action. And the action, one of the ones that we're trying to propose is New Mexico is a very small state population-wise, but we are huge land mass and gas and oil, and most of that gas and oil sits under state property. We have a fund called the Land Grant Permanent Fund, which is the second largest in the nation. And it does spin off some money that we do invest at K-12 and some other beneficiaries. But what we're proposing is that we need to expand the definition of education to include the little guys, not a new beneficiary, but just saying we need to invest in these little ones. And now, and we have proposed to the state legislature to do a constitutional amendment, which would draw 1.5% off of this fund. Now, this fund is $11 billion, and it's not like any other fund. It doesn't just grow by the stock market, but it also grows by royalties, gas and oil royalties. And we propose 1.5% of that needs to be drawn off and spent on the children. It would create somewhere between $150 to $200 million, which would be a great economic stimulus. We haven't seen anybody propose an economic stimulus of that size.
A statewide stimulus, right?
A statewide stimulus. And it would pump money into these early childhood programs. You know, we keep sending these children to the public schools, and they want to criticize the schools. But the children are arriving so far behind that the work that it takes to get there. So this investment can be done. And we've had it in the legislature twice. It has gotten very close to passing. There is one person that's making this not happen.
Well, who are you talking about?
Okay, I'm going to say it right now. John Arthur Smith. You know, this piece of legislation made it out of committees, made it out of the judiciary, Senate judiciary, the House judiciary.
He's a Democratic senator.
He's a Democratic senator. We have the votes on the floor of both the Senate and the House to make this happen. And this piece of legislation doesn't go to the governor's desk. It is a constitutional amendment that goes to the voters. We did our homework. Sandoroff did a poll for us. 80% of the people of New Mexico want this on the ballot. And 71% reported that they would vote for it had it been that on the ballot that day of the poll. This is huge. Why is it one man who represents the second smallest constituency in the state as far as a district has the power to stop this from happening? We were given a hearing the second to the last night of the session at 9:30 at night, and one of the legislators, I couldn't even believe they asked the question. Well, we expected more children to be here for this hearing. It's 9:30 at night on the second to the last day of the session. That's how you kill legislation. The four committees that passed this, they are as intelligent as Mr. Smith and have said, we want this. The majority want this, and we need to go forward.
And I want to say, we need to let New Mexicans decide. You know, I think it's a travesty to not give this to the public and let the public decide. And, you know, to keep this question from them, I think, is just unbelievable. And secondly, I just want to say to Hal, I don't believe that we've been throwing money at education. I'm saying this is what people say to us. And so I completely agree with him.
And we use the term invest because, you know, right now we invest in the stock market. It's a permanent fund, and something that's not permanent today is the stock market. Our children are permanent. I believe more in our children than in the stockbrokers.
Let's take another call. Jody in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. You asked earlier about what we're doing to help our children, and I just wanted to say that I worked on a tutoring program in my kids' elementary school, and I know that there's a lot of attention to fourth grade reading, and what I saw was that it's really hard for kids to catch up. And so I'm wondering what we can do to better prepare our kids so that we're not always playing a game of catch up.
I think it goes to early childhood intervention. As Alan said earlier, the more kind of support that we can give to families in 0 to 3 is critical. That sets the, when I say cognitive development, we're talking about how the brain is wired to make you better ready and able to learn, and then particularly the effects of pre-K. And we know that the LFC recently just did a report in the first findings of how these children are doing, and children who have been in pre-K programs are showing better academic achievement than those that don't.
Yeah, and, you know, when we talk about the children, even if they're very young, we hear encouraging people to read to the baby, even while they're in the womb. You've probably heard the term before, infant mental health. And the first time I heard that, I thought it was crazy. And I got this image in my head of this little baby laying on the couch of a psychiatrist. But it hit me. If this baby could talk, what would the baby be saying? The baby's saying, Doc, it's my parents. They just don't get me. And these programs like home visiting and early intervention, it helps these parents get it, especially these young parents, that you are the primary caregiver and primary educator of your child. And if they get that with the first child and get it early, it doesn't matter what school that kid goes to, they're going to succeed.
Alan Sanchez is president and CEO of St. Joseph Community Health. Veronica Garcia is executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children. She is also a former secretary of education. She served under former Governor Bill Richardson. Let's take another call. David in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine and your guests. And first of all, if you could do me the favor of allowing me to stay online for responses. And forgive me, when I was on with your call screener, I missed Alan speaking about which legislation it was that was killed. So before I begin, if you could please, in like one or two sentences, just tell me what that legislation was.
Sure. Mr. Sanchez was talking about calls to use a fund. Some people call it the rainy day fund. It's the land grant fund. It's a permanent fund that the state has that is kind of considered untouchable by some folks. And then there are other folks who are calling for a percentage of that fund to be taken out and used towards education. Go ahead with your comment.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, I spent every of the 30 days of last session at no pay, attending all day long the committee hearings in the roundhouse, and I remember that bill. I was in the room when that happened, and I'm also interested in other legislation. Now, a couple of comments in rapid succession here. I don't understand as an outsider to this state. I mean, I lived here for 8-9 years, but from elsewhere, you're last. But I see it as you could be first because you are small in terms of population. You should be able to maneuver much faster, with or without money. Money helps. I see ways to do it with money or without money. Let me go back to
wait, David. Let me pause you, yes, for a second. What are your non-money suggestions?
Non-money, and let me first preface that by saying that my style, which is very investigational, I ask a lot of questions that I don't have the answers to now, so it's impossible for me to give you everything right now, because in order to arrive at what I would do next, I have to be allowed to ask people questions and to observe what's going on now, and I can't do that. I haven't been able to do that. I would do that if someone invited me to, or if I forced my way in somewhere, but to to give you a short answer, a summary, is that the way that we operated in times past, you know, let's go back to a one-room schoolhouse situation, the community was involved in everybody's lives, and I don't mean in an intrusive way, and they got things done, people got educated, and they did some very amazing things because, for instance, those people that learned in a one-room schoolhouse with no money for the budget, they went on to all the modern creations that went into, I'm not glorifying war, but all the technology that went into World War II all came from people that started their education in one-room schoolhouses and went on, which is just the proof that you can do it just by people helping without having a grand budget. Now, if you have all kinds of money available, then all the better. But it can be done one way or the either way, and I'm happy to expand further on
Actually,
it.
Actually, David, but, I'm going to pause you because we do have full phone lines. So thank you very much for your call. We're going to take another call from Melissa in Albuquerque. Good morning, Melissa. You're on the air.
Oh, and thank you for this show.
Sure.
I really appreciate the comments of your panelists and the other callers. And I want to add to Alan's comments about expanding the definition of education. I absolutely support expanding support for education in the pre-K realm. And as one of your panelists mentioned, after kids don't complete high school, they don't just disappear. They become members of our community. They raise kids, and many of them really are strongly motivated to finish their education. There are lots of different reasons why young people don't finish their education, and I've been an adult educator for about 15 years, and the folks who come into my GED classes are among the most dedicated, motivated people that any educator could hope to have in a classroom. And yet adult education, that is GED classes, English classes for English learners, literacy classes for people who don't read, those classes and that entire realm of education is constantly shunted off to the side as conversations always spin around mostly K through 12 and college level, and occasionally include pre-K, but practically never include discussion of adult education. And the fact is that the money invested in helping someone earn a GED, both because it gets them a piece of paper that they need to get a better job, and because it gives them skills to allow them to help their kids and to go on to college, that money is recouped by the state. There are different analyses, but it's 3 to 5 times, and in fact, some analyses have it much greater than that, when you look at increased tax revenue from people who can get better jobs. Certainly, there's no way to calculate the value of a parent being able to help a child as they go through school versus a parent who has to say to a kid in 4th or 5th or 6th or 8th grade, "I'm sorry, honey, I can't help you with your homework. I don't understand it." So I just want to really encourage, I'm glad to know that the Kids Count survey is now looking at adult, the parent education levels, and I want to encourage all of us when we think about education to remember the importance of investing in the education of folks who are no longer in the K through 12 system, but who cannot access the college system, because that's an huge piece of our population, and we really need to invest the resources there. We have to turn people away all the time. We have waiting lists all the time for GED classes, English classes, people who want to improve their skills, who want to be able to get better jobs and move up, and often they have to wait because there are no classes for them.
Thanks for your call, Melissa. Ms. Garcia, what is your response to this? I'm wondering first, is the indicator about adult parental education level, is that one of the new indicators in this year's report?
No. We have, for several years, they have looked at educational attainment level of the parents as well as educational attainment level of adults in the state. And it is a key factor. We know that One of the best predictors also is the educational attainment level of the parent. And for all the reasons that Ellen was talking about, they tend to read to their children. They tend to communicate that they value education. And I agree with Melissa that GED and adult basic ed, especially to the fact that we have many kids in high school, are going to be first-generation high school graduates. And that's hard to believe. But I think what we're saying here is that while I'm not saying don't invest in that, but this is like after the fact. How can we ensure that we don't have many people needing GED preparation and that they don't drop out of high school? And so how can we turn this around really in one generation to make a huge difference for New Mexico so that there isn't such a demand for those kinds of programs?
That was the question I was going to bring to you, Mr. Sanchez. Is there this hope that with fully integrated early childhood education programs for all children that are successful, is it the hope that then eventually there would not be the need for remedial education for college students before they go to college or GED and English, you know, that this adult education might become less necessary because the citizens are getting that education early on?
The research supports that. It's obvious. And you know, we keep talking about these issues. We know the answers. We know that this is it. It's upstream. If we invest in here, we also know that if we change, and it's a paradigm shift, we have to take it this way. It's a paradigm shift that we have to make. Today we spend far more money in the population where the least amount of learning takes place. Most amount of learning and growth takes place in the 0 to 8 years old. That's where the most learning actually takes place in your lifetime. But we spend far more money, and it's because the little guys don't vote. And usually the moms, the single moms, the young parents, they don't vote, so they don't get that attention. So we have to do a paradigm shift. But the investment, for instance, like investing in kids now, using the constitutional amendment, we sunset that in 10 years. Because if we do this for 10 years, we're going to see a decrease in need. The more you spend on the playpen, the more you're going to save at the state pen.
And an increase in productivity. So
exactly.
You have more people making higher wages. You attract more business to New Mexico, and you see revenues go up. And so, as I said earlier in that example between Jamaica and Singapore, this is an economic issue as well. So, you know, people aren't motivated from their heart to what we believe do the right thing for children. You're going to improve the economic well-being, and everyone does better in New Mexico.
We're not talking about an entitlement program. We're talking about the restructuring what education is about, because every child is entitled to that.
Alan Sanchez is president and CEO of St. Joseph Community Health. Veronica Garcia is executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children. This is the KUNM Collins Show. Our lines are full, so I'll be right back with your calls. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. It's 877-899-5866, toll-free. You can also send comments via email or post comments on our website. Again, we'll be right back. This is the KUNM Collins Show.
New Mexico Jazz Workshop presents Cafe Mocha at Salsa Under the Stars on Friday, August 3rd. Led by award-winning vocalist and songwriter Yvonne Uribarri, Cafe Mocha is one of Albuquerque's hottest salsa bands, brewing an exciting blend of son, cha-cha-cha, and other Latin styles. Salsa Under the Stars is every Friday through August 10 at the Albuquerque Museum Amphitheater in Old Town. Tickets are available at the door or at eventbrite.com. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Jazz Workshop.
I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is the KUNM Collins Show. We're talking about child welfare in New Mexico in light of the most recent Kids Count report that has New Mexico falling from 46th to 49th in rankings for child welfare. Our lines are full, and we're going to take a call right here. But first, I want to let you know that Stephen Archuleta with the Children, Youth, and Families Department has joined us on the line. He is the deputy chief of the Juvenile Justice Department within Children, Youth, and Families. Thank you for joining us this morning, Mr. Archuleta. And I'm going to take a few calls, and then we'll bring a couple of them to you, okay?
Okay, good morning. How are you?
Great. Let's go to Neil in Santa Fe. Good morning, Neil. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I'm a physician at the Community Health Center here in Santa Fe. One of the big problems in New Mexico is that many children are born prematurely, and any child born before 38 weeks of pregnancy has an increased risk of learning disability. Obviously, the more preterm, the greater the risk, and those children are more likely to drop out of school, more likely to be unemployed. Programs like the Family Nurse Partnership, which is, I guess, is the program that Alan has, do a great job of helping decrease the risk of premature birth, but our education system does not identify those children. If they're targeted early, their learning disabilities can be addressed and compensated for. And with that being over 1 in 10 children, it really needs to be done in order to address the dropout rate and employability of these children.
Is there a way, Mr. Sanchez, Ms. Garcia, Mr. Archuleta, jump in if you have the answer to my question. Is there a way to isolate kids like the caller is talking about who've been identified as having learning disabilities or perhaps they were born premature? Is there a way to identify
yes.
those folks in the system without then causing further isolation or lack of access for them?
Well, in a sense of helping parents, first of all, identify that they have that issue. I mean, that's number one. Home visiting, we use the firstborn model. You can Google that. We use that. And we've been able to show a decrease in the need for the neonatal intensive care, babies being born at healthy birth weight. And then also we're able to decrease the use of the emergency room by prevention and education.
Is that with health education, to actually
yes.
kind of grow a healthy baby
well,
through your behavior
is.
as a parent, right?
Exactly. They come into the home once a week for 3 years with a curriculum for each week of that baby's life, the health. But we also say that education is part of health, that you can't separate the two. And where there's bad health, it's usually connected to education or income. And so there is a way to do that through home visiting, that you have a dialogue for 3 years with this person. And then when we introduce them to their first pre-K, that goes forward information in a confidential way, but a way that the teachers know, okay, I'm going to be dealing with this child. And the parents are engaged.
And there is Child Find for 3 and 4 year olds, but I think if you can get into the home early, the kinds of programs that Alan is talking about in 0 to 3, then the parent is more cognizant and able to identify these developmental delays and to get the early intervention that the child needs.
But show you the problem. The problem is this: St. Joseph invests more in home visiting than the entire state of New Mexico, the state government, more than the state puts into home visiting. St. Joseph does. Now that's a nonprofit, and that's great. But this needs to be something that's offered to every firstborn in the state.
Let's take another call. Peter in Albuquerque. Good morning, Peter. You're on the air.
Good morning. I am a lawyer who's represented children in the child welfare system for about 30 years. And the problem I'd like your panelists and the CYFD representative to address is, what happens to kids when they age out of the system? Kids who've been abused and neglected, kids in the children's prison system, when they age out, what kind of transition services are they getting to help address the fact that many homeless people are former foster children, and many children who've been in the child welfare system end up incarcerated, and some of my clients even dead?
Mr. Archuleta, he is.
Yes.
Can you give us a response to that?
Sure, absolutely. Good morning, Peter. Actually, within Children, Youth, and Families Department, we actually provide transition services for all our kids that come in within the department. Last year alone, we provided over 7,628 kids with services where we provide wraparound services for those kids. We make sure that they're going to counseling. We're making sure that they're getting the appropriate programming that they need. We even have staff that will work with kids coming out of our facilities to help set them up with education, help set them up with first month's rent, turning on their utility bills if there's no family structure for them to go to because of other issues or economic issues within that family. We try to set them up with those programs. We also work with our kids in making sure that they either get a high school diploma or a GED program in order to help advance them. And so we have a whole curriculum that's put together for these children while they're with the department or working within our agency.
Mr. Archuleta, talk to me a little bit about what you've seen in CYFD in recent years with respect to young people moving through the juvenile justice system. Has there been an increase? We hear about the ranking for child welfare in New Mexico going down. How does that impact the population that you deal with in the juvenile justice system?
Well, in reality, over the last couple of years, and, you know, the information that I have back from 1995 to, you know, 2010 right now is that we've actually seen the number of referrals and kids coming into our facilities dropping. I think the height for us was in 1997 when we were receiving about 25,000 referrals for our agency. Currently, we're down to about 16,000 referrals that we're seeing. And so, you know, of course, that goes with the economy and what's going on with that and, you know, also the services that we're providing for the kids. I think that what we're trying to do within the department is really get to these kids with early intervention, identifying these kids early. We work hand-in-hand with Protective Services and working with them on our new child reporting hotline, which is Pound Safe. And we just try to cooperate more with each other and making sure that we're getting the correct services for this kid. The other thing that we're trying to do is really making sure that we are working with the kid from the first time he receives a referral from law enforcement or within the juvenile justice system. And if that kid happens to go through the process and actually go into our long-term facilities, we keep the same probation officer involved with that kid, and we provide services all the way through. All of these kids are going back to our communities, and we want to make sure that these communities are prepared, the children are prepared, and the families are prepared to receive them back. And so just because they're with us for a short amount of time, we want to make sure that we give them those skill sets that they need in order to come back and be successful within the communities.
Let's take another call. Glenn in Albuquerque. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air. Glenn, are you there? It sounds like Glenn may have chosen not to stay on the line. Let's go to Jay in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jay.
Hi, Elaine. Great discussion this morning. I just wanted to give you a perspective about folks in the upper middle class. My wife and I are both in the upper middle class. We have a two-year-old daughter, just the light of my life and what a change in my life. But I will tell you that being in the upper middle class and just the devastating effects of the education and the environment that I'm concerned with, I'm considering pulling my family to another state that certainly respects and values education at a much higher level. And I just wanted to just put my plug in to say that there's folks that are educated that are considering moving their families, uprooting us. We love Albuquerque. We love New Mexico. But the education is just so terrible here that we're considering moving. Thanks.
Mr. Sanchez.
Glenn, you're talking about why corporations don't come to New Mexico. These big companies that look at places to resettle, usually those CEOs and those presidents and those who are directing companies, they have children, and they don't want to bring them to New Mexico. They don't want to bring their company here because they got to bring their children here. We're talking about a prevention that has to happen. Steve was talking about the expensive but good work that we have to do with the juvenile justice system. But the prevention is in the early childhood development. And we need to go upstream, invest early, and then in 10 years we can start to reappropriate. And this is a solution. I keep asking people, they say, we should not go toward the permanent fund. We should not do this investment. Well, no one has another remedy. Nobody. Nobody has come forward with another remedy. There isn't any political will in Santa Fe for a tax. At some point, they're going to have to address that. I had proposed, let's tax the spaceport, those flights, now before there's any lobbyists hired. You know, we got to do something. But immediately right in front of us, there is $11 billion fund. The fund will continue to grow because it's not just based on income from investment. It's also based on income from gas and oil royalties. And those permanent investments in society have as great or greater return. This is what we have to do. So I want to call the whole community to action. You need to call your legislators, and you need to challenge other nonprofits. St. Joseph became very strategic. We went upstream. We take no government money. So now we're challenging the government. You need to spend your money in programs to public and private contractors to get this done. But St. Joe's doesn't take a penny. We only have so much that we can spend. But I want to challenge all of us. There's something you can do.
And I want to say to Jay, we need families like you to stay in New Mexico and to help our schools get better and to help us advocate for these programs that we know can turn it around. Families in poverty are just trying to survive. And they often can't get involved in their schools in the way that we would like, and they can't go to school board meetings, and they can't go to the legislature. But folks like Jay could, and could really help help New Mexico turn the corner. So I really want to encourage Jay and his family to stay and help New Mexico continue to grow.
What, Mr. Archuleta, what are your recommendations for folks listening today?
Well, again, no, I agree with the information that's being shared. And again, you know, what we're trying to do within the juvenile justice arena is really give those kids those tools. Unfortunately, a lot of our children also are kids that drop out of school or are not welcome back at those schools. And so when we get them in our agency, I mean, that's one of our main priorities, is to make sure that we give that child that education or get them linked with whatever education we can get them linked with so that they can move on in their lives. It's obviously a key to their success in the future.
I want to return back to this report and kind of close our conversation today with areas that you see, Ms. Garcia, Mr. Sanchez, Mr. Archuleta, for what are the kind of the best bang for the buck areas that you see for improvement when we talk about economic well-being, education, health, and family and community, the four segments of indicators that were studied? Ms. Garcia.
Well, I think the best bang for the buck is to invest in early learning. As we look at this particularly underserved population of 0 to 4 with access to pre-K, and the best bang for the buck is that early investment in 0 to 3. I think, secondly, investing in health. We have a great opportunity now with the Medicaid opportunity. We saw the improvements that were made as more children were enrolled. As we can get healthier families, they're better able to support their families. Children living in high poverty and high poverty areas, we know that education is the link there. So it's just a no-brainer. I mean, if we can invest in health and education and early education, then we can get better success in K-12.
Mr. Archuleta, any other recommendations? I don't know if you've had a chance to look at this Kids Count report.
I haven't. In my recommendation is that we work collaboratively with youth and families and the juvenile justice staff and, you know, community providers and natural supports to make sure that these kids actually succeed and, you know, we continue to promote thoughtfulness, response, and creative wraparound services for these children.
Mr. Sanchez.
There is a solution. There's a huge problem in front of us and a lot of bad news, and that news can be turned around into good news. I believe in New Mexico. I believe in our families. And I think if we can let the legislators know, the public want this. They want to invest in early childhood. And they're even willing to do a tax. There's a poll that shows that. But we got to invest.
Thank you. Alan Sanchez is president and CEO of St. Joseph Community Health. Veronica Garcia is the executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children. And Stephen Archuleta is deputy director of juvenile justice with the Children, Youth, and Families Department. Thanks to you all for joining us this morning. Next week on the KUNM Collins Show, we'll take your calls and comments on the Hearth Act. President Obama signed the bill into law this week, giving Native American tribes the authority to lease land directly instead of waiting for approval from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The new law is expected to open the door to badly needed housing development on reservations, as well as wind and solar energy projects that tribes have been eager to launch. We'll hear from tribal leaders about how the laws affect people living in Indian country in New Mexico. That's the KUNM Collins Show next Thursday morning at 8 here on KUNM. Thanks to Chloe Volick for engineering this morning, Michael Hess for his production assistance, and Andy Lyman is our news intern. He was screening your calls. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and this is KUNM.